now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to have our audience participation format with Rabbi Mendel Kaplan as the guest. And if you have anything you'd like to say, any comments, anything you hear, whatever, any questions, just shoot us an email here at m.abeles@chinradio.com, and I will read it on the air to Rabbi Kaplan, and he will address it for you. Good morning, Rabbi Kaplan. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and an easy fast, and a very, very happy Purim.
Well, thank you very much, and the same to you.
Thank you. So we talked about the reading of the Megillah, and we talked about the giving of food, the food parcels. We talked about the giving of gifts to the poor. The one thing we haven't talked about is Su'udat Purim, the meal or the feast of Purim. And I want to first off talk about when we should have this meal, because this year we have a unique kind of schedule. In the code of Jewish law, in the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, doesn't really talk about when to make the meal. In fact, he doesn't give us many details about the meal. He just says, Chayiv Inish Libsumi Bepuria. He tells us that the meal has to be done during the day. He says that's very, very clear. And the idea of eating and merrymaking and rejoicing on Purim is something that not the author of the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo, but rather Rabbeinu Moshe Isserlish, who wrote the glosses on the Shulchan Aruch. You could call him the Ashkenazic Shulchan Aruch, but of course it's one Shulchan Aruch with different font types. So he begins the chapter of 695, Simen Tofresh Sadekei, which is Dinei Su'udas Purim, the laws of Purim, that Ramah, Rabbeinu Moshe, begins with the words, Mitzvah laharbeis besu'uda Purim. It's a mitzvah to increase, to have lots of feasting on Purim. However, he notes, besu'uda achat yotzim. You don't need to eat more than one meal on Purim, although it's a mitzvah to eat lots on Purim. And truth be told, there is an incredible chiddush, a novelty from the Rebbe. This is found in Lakuta Sichas, in volume 3, it's lifted out of some of the Torah the Rebbe shared at the Purim Suda in 1958. And there is an edited talk of the Rebbe. It's printed in the Likut HaSichos, chapter, volume 7. It's under Parshat Vayikra, interestingly. However, there's lots about Purim, and I believe this was from a talk that the Rebbe delivered at the Purim Suda in 1965. I'll start off with the 1958 point. The Rebbe says, because we know that the mitzvah of Su'udat Purim comes from the words Yimei Mishte V'Simcha. The Megillah is very clear, telling us that these are days of feasting and merriment. So because it says Yimei Mishte, the Rebbe suggested that the obligation of the Su'udat Purim is Nimshach Al Kol Hayom. It continues all day. And in fact, not just Kol Hayom, the Rebbe says, Kol rega shel yumei, every moment of that day, although this has to be done, the actual Su'udat Purim has to be eaten during Yom Purim, not Erev, not the evening of Purim, as the Shulchan Aruch, going back to the Code of Jewish Law, clearly says in chapter 695, Su'udat Purim sha'asa'o balayla, a meal of Purim, a feast of Purim, that was enjoyed on the eve or night of Purim, lo yatsa yedei chovato, that does not fulfill the obligation. Although the Ramah is quick to point out that one should have somewhat of a nice meal or eat something extra on the eve of Purim as well. But the Rebbe points out that because it says yimei mishte, we're talking about a chi of an obligation which continues all day long. And that is to say, whilst we may have the su'uda, our official meal, at a certain time, nonetheless, whenever we are saying l'chaim or rejoicing, we are actually fulfilling a mitzvah of Su'udat Purim, and that mitzvah continues all day long. In Lekut HaSichas Chelek Zayin, which is it's a much longer sikh actually, it's not just a footnote, the Rebbe emphasizes the idea of Yeshleimar. He says we could suggest that the mitzvah of Mishteh is uizgetelt, is different from all other mitzvahs that the Chachamim, that the sages ordained for the holiday of Purim. For once you hear the Megillah, if you heard the Ganze Megillah, the whole Megillah, in order, there is no mitzvah to listen to the Megillah a second time on the same day. We had talked about this, Martin, a couple of days ago. You listen to the Megillah on the night of Purim. You listen to Megillah during the day of Purim. But once you've heard it at night or heard it during the day, there is no additional mitzvah to hear the Megillah being read again. You listen to it once, and that fulfills your obligation. And even when it comes to gifts to the poor, which we talked about yesterday, is a very important part of Purim, and it's mitzvah laharbot, there is no chiyuv, there's no obligation. Once you've given two gifts to the poor, now there is no longer any obligation upon you. Yet, when it comes to the mitzvah of rejoicing, when it comes to this mitzvah of mishta, of feasting, so then we have a clear statement, which is Yimei Mishta V'Simcha, and because Yimei Mishta, the word Mishta, which means feast, comes immediately on the heels of the word Yimei, the day. So the Rebbe said, Yeshleimar, we could suggest, and if the Rebbe suggests it, you know, I take it to the bank, as the Chiyuv is if Yede Rega Fun Yimei, it's on every moment of Yimei. Now, Dur Zayin Mekayim Zayin, the mitzvah Pam Achas, once you fulfilled it at a moment, so it's like, you know, you're so to speak, you're good to go. You don't have to go ahead and keep eating. But if you choose to, or if you choose to say l'chaim and keep feasting, you're actively fulfilling the mitzvah of Su'udat Purim. And the Rebbe points out that this is true even though typically Su'udat Purim is usually enjoyed in the afternoon. However, the Rama is very clear in our Shulchan Aruch. He says, "Ukeshachol Purim biyom shishi," when Purim comes on Friday, "Ya'asu ha'su'uda b'shacharit," then the su'uda, the meal, should be made in the morning. And the reason is not because of Purim, but the reason is mishum kvod Shabbat, because of the honor of the special day of the week, which we call Shabbat. And the Vilna Gaon in the Beuri Agra says, you take a look at the chapter 249 of Orach Chaim and Shulchan Aruch, and there you will see that it is stated very clearly. The Rama says this, it's brought down in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, that it says it is a mitzvah to make sure to eat, even if it's a Su'udat mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to do it in the morning. And the reason that it's a mitzvah to do it in the morning is because we want to be sure not to infringe on the honor and the respect and dignity that Shabbat is due. So it's permissible because it's a Su'udat mitzvah, and really one is not supposed to eat a lot on Friday altogether. Friday is a day to minimize eating because you're going to eat and have a meal on Shabbat. However, if it's a Su'udat mitzvah, we don't have the laws of Purim on the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. Unfortunately, those manuscripts were lost. But we do have the laws of Shabbat, and he mentions a variety of su'udot mitzvah, like, for example, a brit milah, a pidyon haben. These are various meals which are eaten to celebrate a mitzvah. He says it could be done on Friday. However, ideally, it should be done in the morning. And I just want to mention this because I've heard that there are many, many communities that are pointedly choosing to have their meals in the evening and flow into Shabbat. And to be sure, if you are still eating your meal on Purim, you are allowed to be what is called Poris Mapa, where you can cover over the bread and you can make Kiddush and then continue the meal. That's all true, but it is very much Bidi Aved. That is only if you have no choice. For anybody who has a choice, and, you know, I have to go to work, I'm sorry, it's not a great choice. If it was, I mentioned this last week on the radio, if it was your daughter's wedding, would you go to work on that day? Or would you say, hey, this is a personal day, I can't be at work? I think we all know the answer to that question. So how do you view Purim? Purim is a big deal, and we shouldn't be going to work on Purim. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch says that the money we're going to make on Purim, it won't stay with us anyway. It's not really inherently ours. So money that doesn't really belong to you or belong with you is simply going to go out the window, and it'll take some other money along with it, because that's the nature of things. So if you're going to go to work, you're not going to benefit anyway. Make it a personal day. Go to shul, listen to the Megillah, gather your family or come together with your community, and you celebrate. And you celebrate. And you have to know, Martin, that the celebration that we undertake on Purim is a very, very important thing, as the Rebbe points out in a letter that he wrote on Moshe Rabbeinu's birthday in the year 1952. He wrote that the Simcha of Purim is Gedola Harbe, is exceedingly greater than the Simcha of a regular Yom Tov. The regular Yom Tov has a feasting in a limited way, and the Rambam clearly says, don't drink too much wine. And here we are told to imbibe, assuming that good results are going to emerge, not a person behaving badly, because bad behavior is never good. And if anybody is interested in learning more about how much you have to drink or don't have to drink on Purim, I encourage you to visit my YouTube channel and to watch a class that I gave a couple of years ago called Getting Wasted on Purim. So I'm not saying that we should necessarily end up under the table. I am saying that we should necessarily be having our Purim Su'uda in the morning of Purim to celebrate Purim properly without infringing on the honor that we are required to give the holy day of Shabbat.
Okay. Rabbi Kaplan, I have a couple of questions here for you.
Okay.
While we're on this topic. And, now as you were saying, we shouldn't really work on Purim, but now tomorrow, of course, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be on the air, and I'm hoping, of course, that you'll be joining me as you usually do on Friday.
I expect to be joining you, and let me qualify and say that I don't get paid for this, and it's not really work for me. Not any more than the sermons I give on Shabbat or the classes that I teach during the week. I'm sure that for you, being on the radio is a labor of love, and it is an opportunity for you to share Yiddishkeit with our listeners. And I have every intention of being in the middle of my su'uda by the time we will speak on the radio, because we're starting our great big Purim breakfast bash at 10 a.m. And I expect to be after much l'chaim. And it should be a lively conversation that you and I will enjoy. And
well,
I will
look forward to that.
I will try to share some insights from the Megillah that can uplift and inspire our listeners. So yes, you may use a motor vehicle, and people are allowed to cook. You can do these things. It's not like a Yom Tov in
right.
that sense. But the idea, what I mean is, you know, just going to work in a way that doesn't reflect a Yiddishkeit message. You know, people have jobs, whatever, whether you're an attorney, whether you're an accountant, whether you run a business. The point is that Purim is a day in which we celebrate our bond with Hashem in a very unique and special way. This is the day that celebrates and commemorates the fruition of nothing less than Mount Sinai itself. Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, the Jewish people accepted upon ourselves that we would be devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a very, very important celebration. And the fact that...
Well, I agree there. And now, this year it's very interesting. As you mentioned, because Purim falls on a Friday, so in Yerushalayim, of course, Shushan Purim would be on Shabbos. But I understand they're celebrating 3 days of Purim this year. Because
right. So this is called a Purim Meshulash, and it's actually very interesting what happens in Yerushalayim. They do some of the things of Purim on Friday, on the regular day of Purim. For example, the listening of the Megillah never gets pushed off. So on Friday in Yerushalayim this year, they are going to be reading the Megillah, both tonight and tomorrow. And because you're not allowed to read the Megillah on Shabbat, we're concerned that somebody might end up carrying in a public domain. And ideally, this is done in a minyan the way it is everywhere else. The gifts to the poor that we spoke about yesterday, Matanot le'evyonim, are also performed on Friday, on Erev Shabbat, tomorrow, the regular Purim, and that's because they are linked to the reading of the Megillah.
Okay.
But that's what takes place on Friday. And then on Shabbat in Yerushalayim, they'll be saying Al HaNisim in their prayers, as well as in their after blessings, the grace after meals. They'll be saying Al HaNisim. And in Yerushalayim, this Shabbat, they're going to be taking out two Sifrei Torah, whereas we in the diaspora will only take out one Sifrei Torah. This year's Parsha is for Shushan Purim, happens to be Ki Tisa, and we'll be reading Parshas Ki Sisa. However, in Yerushalayim, they'll be reading the Purim Day reading as well. They will not be reading the Purim Day reading on Friday. They'll be reading that on Shabbat. And it is customary in Yerushalayim to drink a little more, eat a little more, and be a little merrier than you are on a regular Shabbat.
Okay, well, that sounds very interesting.
And then comes Sunday. And on Sunday, it is said that those in Yerushalayim will wear their Shabbat finery, and they will fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot, giving gifts of food to a friend, and they will have their Su'uda not on Friday, but on Sunday.
Okay, well that's pretty cool. Okay, first of all, I just want to remind everybody, if you'd like to comment on anything you've heard or ask a question of Rabbi Kaplan, again, just send me an email.
I had a question coming in on Facebook that I'll address. Somebody's asking whether Purim is like Chol HaMoed. That's the intermediate days of Yom Tov. The answer is no. No, because Chol HaMoed is a biblical day of importance, and the limitations of work, there are actually three schools of thought, whether it's entirely biblical, entirely rabbinic, or rather that the origin or basis is biblical, and it was the details were handed off to the rabbis to figure out how that works. At any rate, it's not like Chol HaMoed. On Chol HaMoed, we're not allowed to do certain kinds of work, whereas on Purim, there isn't a problem with that. You know, on Chol HaMoed, it's a problem to take something to the tailor or to use your washing machine. It's not so simple. But on Purim, there's no limitation like that. On Purim, the idea of not going to work is quite literally not going to work. You can do all the things we do during the weekday, but to go to work is inappropriate. And of course, we should be wearing our Shabbat clothing or dressed up in a costume, as you said you were ready to be.
Right, exactly so. Anyways, as Jerry was saying before, if anybody else like to have anything they want to say or any questions, just give us an email here at m.abeles@chinradio.com. Now, Rabbi Kaplan, a lot of people may not understand exactly what Shushan Purim is. I mean, I know what it is, and of course, you know, most of the people you associate with, but some listeners may not be fully, familiar with it. If you could sort of explain that.
I can certainly try. I have a feeling that the people who aren't sure what Shushan Purim is are probably not that sure what Purim is either. So maybe we should talk about Purim. For those who don't know, there was a planned genocide against the Jewish people. Not a fake genocide, a real genocide, where every single member of the Jewish people was supposed to be killed on a particular day. The day happened to be today, the 13th day of Adar. That's the day that was chosen. And miraculously, everything turned inside out. Instead of us being attacked, we were allowed to attack our enemies, the Amalekites. We were allowed to destroy them in self-defense, which we did. Miraculously, we did not suffer losses. And Am Yisrael's fortunes shifted entirely. And during this time, not a single member of Am Yisrael abandoned Judaism, even though Haman's decree was not on those who might have Jewish DNA, but those who would identify as Jewish people. Not a single member of our nation chose to identify otherwise. And when the miracle took place, the Jewish people were eager to embrace a new holiday, a new mitzvot. And this indicated that the mitzvot that they had accepted at the time of Matan Torah, at the time of Mass Revelation at Sinai, was not under duress, but rather something they wanted to do, something they did with enthusiasm and joy. And that is why we see Purim as the end of the story of the giving of the Torah itself. This is when we truly become a people. As I mentioned in many of my recent classes, it may not be the idea that we actually accepted upon ourselves the mitzvot. It's the time when it became clear to everyone, including ourselves, that we accepted upon ourselves the mitzvot. So the battles happened on the 13th day of Adar, and the celebrations followed the next day. Now in Shushan, which was the capital of the Persian Empire, an enormous empire comprised of 127 provinces. Forget 50 states, 127 provinces. Most of those provinces at some point had been independent countries. All were hammered together for this unbelievably powerful and very influential empire. So in Shushan, that was the main concentration. I think it's called Susa, is the academic name for it. And today we know where Shushan was. There are still remnants of various structures that were built by Ahasuerus or Xerxes. And in Shushan, there was an enormous concentration of Amalekites or Hamanites. And though they did battle on the 13th, they didn't succeed in getting rid of all their enemies. It was, shall we say, too infested. So they petitioned the king, Ahasuerus, to have another day. And so they battled on the 13th and on the 14th. And as such, there wasn't respite till the 15th day of Adar. And hence, when Purim was established, everybody established Purim the way it had been celebrated that first year. That's what Mordechai and Esther decided was the right thing to do. So a year later, they said, last year, everybody celebrated on the 14th, and people in Shushan celebrated on the 15th, so it shall be for posterity. And the interesting thing is that because the miracles of Purim take place outside of Israel, and because of Israel's centrality to our identity as a Jewish people, our sages ordained that any city that was walled at the time when Joshua entered the land of Israel and established the Jewish commonwealth, any walled city at the time, which meant any prominent city at the time, would keep Purim on the 15th day like Shushan. Since Shushan was a city of great prominence, it was the capital city, this would give prominence to Eretz Yisrael, even though it was already 1,000 years after the conquest of Eretz Yisrael for the first time in the establishment of the eternal country of the Jewish people of Eretz Yisrael. So the only city we know with certainty is an ancient city in the same place that it always has been is Yerushalayim. And that's because the Temple Mount is clearly visible and the Kotel is available. So we know exactly where Yerushalayim was. When it comes to other ancient cities, there isn't clarity as to whether those cities were standing 33 centuries ago and or whether they were walled cities 33 centuries ago. For example, Tel Aviv is a modern city. I almost want to laugh when I hear people calling Tel Aviv, quote, end quote, occupied. And they stole our homes, say the Fagestinians, from in Tel Aviv. Hey, there was no Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv was established on sand dunes, and there are pictures to prove it. So
oh, yeah. I had a great uncle who participated in building it.
Wow, amazing, amazing. So that's the story of Tel Aviv. Now, it's next to a city named Yafo, and they say that the city of Yafo is an ancient city. But again, is the city of Yafo exactly where the city is today, or perhaps not? There are those who will read the Megillah that extra day in Hebron as well, because we know Ma'arat HaMachpelah, we know exactly where that is, and it's still the same location.
Also, I think Safat, there's a bit of a machlekes there that was Safat had walled.
Well, there is a machlekes. It definitely wasn't called Safat. Safat is a more contemporary name that's probably closer to 15 centuries old. There is a mention in the Zohar of Ara de Galil. It says that Mashiach will first reveal himself in the city of the Galilee. And there's a tradition, an oral tradition, that the words of the Zohar, Ara de Galil, are referring to Tzfat. So that's the first mention we have of the possibility of Tzfat. But yes, my cousins read the Megillah on 2 days. And I'll tell you something else. In Haifa, which is essentially a city around Har HaKarmel, and we know that Har HaKarmel was extant at the time of the Jewish people's entrance into Eretz Yisrael, and it was a very famous city. Eliyahu HaNavi brought the fire down at Har HaKarmel. That was last week's Haftorah. So that's this week's Haftorah. So the idea of Har HaKarmel is the question is Haifa. Is Haifa a modern city? It's a modern name, but is Haifa or Haifa, is it built on the ruins of Har HaKarmel? And my wife has an uncle who's one of the shluchim in Haifa, and they had a kinus shluchim. They had a meeting of the regional shluchim, and they had sent the invitation to the Rebbe to show the Rebbe what they were doing. and the convocation was taking place in a synagogue in a Haifa synagogue called Beit HaKnesset Har HaKarmel. And the Rebbe circled the words Har HaKarmel, and he wrote Boi Koirim HaMegillah Gam BeTezvav. In Har HaKarmel, the Megillah would be read on the 15th as well. So there's one minyan in Haifa too that reads the Megillah on the 15th day, and the chief rabbi Rav Shar Yosef HaKoyen Zecheinu Levracha used to daven in the Chabad Shul once a year on Shushan Purim to hear the Megillah being read. I'm pretty sure they read the Megillah in Tiberias as well. We believe that's also an ancient city. But again, these things are not with certainty. The only city that really celebrates Shushan Purim with certainty in today's day and age is the holy city of Yerushalayim, the eternal capital of the Jewish people.
Okay. Well, and I know that my son, when he was studying at Safat, he used to make a point of going to Yerushalayim and Shushan Purim in order to extend the holiday to get more out of it.
Right. It's like that's very popular for yeshiva boys and girls in Israel. It's like Purim is the most joyous day of the year. How do you get it twice as much? And the answer is you're wherever you are for the first day of Purim, for Yudalad, the 14th of Adar, and you go to Yerushalayim to continue the celebration. And like you mentioned, this year it's a 3-day celebration in Yerushalayim. You don't have to go anywhere. In Yerushalayim itself, they'll be celebrating for 3 days. Although I have to say, on Friday, I don't think there'll be any merrymaking in Yerushalayim. I think they just listen to the Megillah and they give the gifts to the poor. But there's a celebratory Shabbat and, of course, a very, very joyous Sunday post Shushan Purim this year in Yerushalayim.
Well, it makes you sort of envious here, you know, what do you think of that? And perhaps, you know, as they say that when the Mashiach comes, that Purim will be the only holiday that we really still celebrate. And so then that's something to look forward to then too.
Well, of course, you have to ask yourself what that means, because it says that the Torah is never going to be nullified. And it's omedet la'olam la'olam la'olam, that the Torah is eternal. So what would that mean? In Hasidus, we have the explanation that every Yom Tov has a special energy and a special light that radiates. And it sets the day aside from the other days. And in fact, if you or I could see it, and I know we can't because we're very ordinary pedestrian people, but really holy people, they feel something different. They sense something different. There's a story told that Rabbi Yisrael of Ruzhin, one of the great Hasidic masters of the 19th century, he was a little boy and he was learning Chumash and then he was learning Mishnah, and his teacher taught him the halakha of what happens when somebody is lost in a desert or at sea and he doesn't remember what day of the week it is. What do you do about Shabbat? And little Yisrael did not understand how this could be. He said to his teacher, why don't they just look at the sky and they'll be able to see if it's Shabbat? Now, the sky doesn't look any different to me, Martin. It looks exactly the same. I was told that somebody once asked the Rebbe's father, if Yom Kippur is such a special day, why does it feel, or Rosh Hashanah, why does it feel like every other day? And Rebbe Levi Yitzchok, Rebbe's holy father, looked at him incredulously, and he said, he was the chief rabbi of the city called Yakutinislav, Catherine City, later on renamed by the communists to Dnepropetrovsk. It's right on the Dnepr River. It's like a mighty river in Ukraine. And he looked at him incredulously, and he said, what do you mean the same? Even the Dnepr River flows differently on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So tzaddikim can see these things, and regular people can't, but we know that it is true because so it is written in Torah. However, when Mashiach will come, there will be such a light, such a radiance, such an aura that will saturate all of our existence that the Yom Tov won't look any different. It won't feel special or seem special on a spiritual level, even though we'll do all the things we're supposed to do because the halakha doesn't change, but it won't feel that way. And the holiday of Purim radiates with such a bright light and such a powerful energy. And it's such a unique and special time that even when Mashiach will come, it'll be a day amongst days, an outstanding and extraordinary period of time.
Well, it really sounds like something to look forward to.
But you know what? We should look forward to it now, because it doesn't say Mashiach's coming is going to change Purim. It says even Mashiach's coming is not going to change Purim. That means as of tonight when Purim arrives, Martin, the lights are on, the energy flows, and the world is aglow with otherworldly godliness. It's just the world is different, and we may not see it, and we may not feel it, but it is so. And if we are carefully observant of the mitzvot, then we are able to tap into that, even if we aren't actually feeling it.
Well, I guess that's something we should all strive to do. Sort of on an interesting side note is, I've heard, I remember, in fact, was the rabbi at my shul, I think it was still a year ago, or close to Purim, he was talking about how there were many very small local Purims in places where Jews were miraculously saved from, you know, from a great misfortune. And it's in these little shtetlach or whatever, they would commemorate those days, or they did, I guess, at least, well, those...
There is such a concept. There is such a concept, but it's, none of these are ever universal. There was a famous city in Spain that was had a very, very dense population of Jews, and they had a very scary situation, and they almost weren't. It was called Sargosa, and they had an annual celebration called Purim Sargosa. So yes, there were a number of different Purims. I don't think it's extremely common, but a number of different Purims that were observed by communities that had experienced miraculous deliverance. But Purim, the Purim that we are waiting for, is something that is universal. It's universal. It's universally important for every one of us. And as we just talked about, it's something that is going to be resonant and special even when Mashiach will come.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Rabbi Kaplan. And tomorrow, when it actually is Purim, we can talk about this some more.
I want to make a suggestion, Martin. Since we talked about the Sudat Purim being in the morning, I'm going to make a suggestion that you should wash for Hamotzi before you leave in the morning, right after Megillah, and bring a sandwich with yourself. And that way you can be having the Sudat Purim while you're on air. And I think
at the shul, first of all, every Friday morning, we always have a breakfast learning session anyhow. And so I'm sure it's going to be a little bit embellished tomorrow.
But when you wash your hands for Hamotzi, you should have in mind that you'll be continuing the Su'udah down at Chin Radio. You will thereby uplift the station. And of course, I'm sure you're going to say L'chaim. So you'll bring some wine with you, maybe take an Uber instead of driving down.
Right.
And you and I can have a proper Purim Dik conversation, sharing the joy and the good cheer with all of our listeners. And you know what, Martin? Even if Mashiach comes today, it'll still be Purim tomorrow, and I'm sure that you and I will still be speaking on the radio and sharing words of joy, Yiddishkeit pride, and celebration. Any which way, I look forward to having our Purim on air together, and may Hashem help us that we indeed merit to see our world change forever, that'll still allow for Purim to glow with the coming of Mashiach in our time. B'mheira u'b'yameinu speedily, and in our days, amen.
Well, amen. Thanks so much, Rabbi Kaplan. Okay, we'll talk again tomorrow.
Bezrat Hashem. And thank you all for listening. Have a beautiful day. A very happy Purim to you all.